You're listening to a recording from the Open Society Institute, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. Our main speaker today is Gaston Sakaeva, who tomorrow will be receiving the prestigious Voices of Courage Award from IRC's Women's Commission for Refugees and Children. Gaston is a program officer and board member of the Grozny-based NGO Reliance, which both the International Women's Program and the Russia Project are funding this year to work with victims of gender-based violence in Chechnya. Under her leadership, Reliance has been running bold and far-reaching programs for women in Chechnya in areas like income generation, psychological help for victims of rape during war, and campaigns against gender-based violence. Before working with Reliance, Gaston had a decade-long career with international humanitarian aid organizations in the North Caucasus, including CARE, Doctors Without Borders, and Handicap International. In fall 2007, she was in New York for 2 months for a fellowship at the International Center for Tolerance Education. And in March, she was also here to attend the annual session of the UN Commission on the Status of Women as an NGO delegate, where she was the first person to ever represent Chechnya. She's spoken at a variety of universities across the United States, including Cornell, Columbia, Berkeley, and she herself holds a degree in English from Chechen State University. Last week, she also learned that she'll be returning to the U.S. in the fall to study at the graduate level when she learned that she received the Muskie Fellowship, which is a great honor, and we all congratulate her on that. Before Gaston speaks, though, we're going to be hearing from Rachel Denbar, who will provide some background on the political situation and the human rights climate currently in Chechnya. Rachel is the deputy director of the Europe and Central Asia Division at Human Rights Watch. Before this, she was the head of the Human Rights Watch's Moscow Bureau from 1992 to 1997. She has written about and traveled widely throughout Russia, the Southern Caucasus, Central Asia, and the Baltic states. So thank you very much, both, for being here. And for everyone's knowledge, today's talk is being recorded, so it may be made available at some point on OSI's website. So if you do ask any questions after these two women speak, please keep that in mind. Thank you.
Well, Megan, thank you. It's really an honor to be here, and it's an honor to be at the same table with Gaston. I just want to make a couple of remarks to sort of set the stage for what Gaston will be talking about. As all of you, I'm sure, know, for 14 years, Chechnya has been in a state of either armed conflict, severe political chaos, an abusive counterinsurgency campaign, and then, most recently, stifling authoritarianism. It is truly a wrenching political trajectory, wrenching historical trajectory. The wars, as you know, were utterly devastating and were marked by severe human rights violations, at the height of both wars, the 94 war and the war that started in 1999, the bombing and shelling in the early phases of these wars, the bombing and shelling of numerous towns and villages that caused thousands of civilian deaths and destroyed untold numbers of homes. Hundreds of people were shot in massacres as Russia's federal forces regained control in the early phases of both wars, regained control over Chechen territory, over neighborhoods. And the mass graves that are now turning up all over Chechnya, and that many of us in human rights organizations have known about for quite a while, these mass graves are really testimony to this. In the immediate aftermath of both wars, and especially through the present, through this sort of counterinsurgency period, thousands of people were rounded up, tortured to secure confessions or information, or tortured in order to turn them into government informants. Certainly in recent years, there's been very credible information about a network of secret places of detention scattered all across Chechnya. And particularly in the second Chechnya war, there were a number of cases that were extremely difficult to document, but that we know exist, of sexual violence against women, rape, gang rape, and the like. I think one of the most haunting markers of both wars is the enormous numbers of people who have simply disappeared without a trace. one of the most traumatizing things that that Chechen society has to face. Estimates range from between 3,000 to 5,000 people who were last seen being taken into custody, or there is reason to believe that they were last seen, that they are in some state of custody. And they have simply disappeared. Maybe they're still in custody where they are vulnerable to abuse, or perhaps they are in some of the mass graves that I just told you about. Aside from appealing to the European Court of Human Rights for justice, there is almost literally no justice for any of the abuses that I've just described to you. Impunity is very much the norm. There has been massive upheaval caused by both of these wars. Hundreds of thousands of people forced to flee, gradually returned, but their homes and their livelihoods have been destroyed and have to be rebuilt. There's the physical destruction, but there's also the not at all abstract devastation to the social fabric of Chechnya. Today, I think many are eager to say that the conflict has ended and that the Kremlin's counterterrorism policies in Chechnya have succeeded in bringing stability not only to Chechnya but also to the broader Northern Caucasus region. It is true that the number of disappearances have fallen sharply, and it's true that that there has been reconstruction in Grozny. I'm sure you've all read about it in a number of articles in the New York Times and other media outlets. It's gained a lot of attention, and there have been some, I think Gistan might agree that there have been some notable improvements in social infrastructure. But I would really hesitate to call it a success story. Chechnya, as you all know, is led by Ramzan Kadyrov, with maybe what you don't know is stifling and growing authoritarianism. And under his rule, Chechnya has become an enclave, which is capable of operating utterly outside the Russian justice system. Kadyrov has gradually but very decisively been shutting civil society, intimidating human rights defenders, journalists and the like. There is no longer an independent press in Chechnya. And it's dangerous not only to criticize Ramzan Kadyrov, it is dangerous not to praise him, as we've learned in several examples. And I don't know if you saw today's, I hate to keep saying New York Times, it really, it's very provincial of me, but I don't know if you saw today's New York Times, but there was an article about the dismantling of the cult of personality of Sepah Murad Niyazov in Turkmenistan, and I thought it was rather ironic that in a day when finally, one cult of personality is being dismantled. Another one, the cult of personality of Ramzan Kadyrov, is being constructed and advanced. Kadyrov has most recently chosen to prioritize the struggle for morality in Chechen society that has, it's hard to be against morality, but his particular brand of morality has a direct bearing on women's rights. And he has, in a society where many women wear headscarves anyway, he has decided to order that women wear headscarves. For example, just to wrap up, I mean, I think that ending impunity for war crimes and other crimes against humanity and severe human rights violations, ending impunity and sort of repairing the social fabric after an armed conflict is no easy task in any post-conflict situation. And in Chechnya, I think that task is made much more complicated by this kind of stifling authoritarianism. And women in Chechnya, I think, have always faced many challenges in realizing their rights, even before the wars ever happened. Chechnya has a very strict patriarchal order I won't get into it here, but that in many instances violate women's human rights. During both of the wars, women were the targets and survivors of abuse. Women bore the brunt of searching for their disappeared brothers, fathers, and husbands, and for providing their families when their families were displaced or otherwise in distress. And then after the war, you know, the lack of justice for abuse, the sort of festering trauma of abuse, and the war's disruption of the social infrastructure, the social fabric, means that women and girls are more and more vulnerable to domestic violence, to forced marriage, to child marriage even. You know, I think women and others and men in Chechnya, they have been victims of abuse, and I think people, I think we pay a lot of attention to that for all the right reasons, because we want to ensure that there is not impunity for that abuse and that they're able to obtain justice. But I would also like to emphasize that they're above all not victims but survivors, and that they're above all they are people who take control over their fate and who try to make positive change in the most adverse of circumstances. And this is where I'd like to turn over the floor to Gistam, who is just an amazing woman.
Thank you very much for your interest to my country. I'm very happy to be here and to share my feelings, because, you know, we haven't any chance to give this message on behalf of Chechen people, you know, and I'm very happy that I would be able to pass message on behalf of Chechen people to you, and to share the feelings and to share difficulties we had for the last 14, 15 years. And, you know, it's very hard for me sometimes when I return back to my republic and start to speak about all difficulties, because it is very hard even to imagine how much difficulties in reality faced Chechen women. We faced a lot of challenges. We lost their houses, we lost our beloved family members, we lost our fathers, brothers, and a lot of women still. You know, in my work, I have seen so many severe cases of women suffering, and for me, it was like, I don't know even how to explain. During the daytime, I was hearing different kind of stories from about 40, 50 women, and then I was coming back home. I was in despair, in very deep depression, because I couldn't even forget some of the stories. And all the stories I was hearing from the women, they were different, completely different stories. But, you know, all these women, it was like, you know, they were suffering so much, and it was so impressive that even they, you know, they couldn't have some place to go to share their feelings, to look for the place where they can get some assistance. They were so vulnerable. And I met these old people when I was experiencing some troubles. And, you know, when I heard that Care Canada is going to implement some projects in Chechnya, I was very happy to hear about that, because Care Canada was the first organization who did survey in Chechnya and realized that the programs for women, very important programs, that women is very vulnerable group of people in Chechnya. And when Care Canada started to implement the project, they were looking for local partner, and organization Reliance became a very important local implementing partner of Care Canada. And we were very sad when we heard that Care Canada is going to close the mission in North Caucasus. And suddenly we heard, we saw applications that we can apply and we can submit our project proposal to Open Society Institute. We haven't had any chance that we might have possibility to get some funds from Open Society Institute, but we decided that we have nothing to lose, we can just apply and see what we can do. And I can't even express my feelings how happy we were when we heard back from Open Society Institute. And this day, I had my two children at kindergarten. And you know, the internet system is working very bad in Chechnya. I didn't notice that I spent 6 hours at internet cafe trying to attach my project proposal, and because of photos I couldn't attach this, and I had to delete all photos from project proposal. And that when we returned back to the office, I realized that my children, I left my children at kindergarten. And it was already, you know, I was supposed to pick up my children at 5 o'clock, and it was already 9 o'clock. I was still at the office. And then, you know, I told to our country director, Care Canada, you know, I have forgotten about my children. And she told me, yeah, I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm. It's not. We did great deal. Yeah. And she told me, I hope you still have these children. And so I returned back to kindergarten, and I found my children safe. They were taken by nurse to her house, and you know, I will never forget this experience of starting my collaboration with Open Society Institute. For me, it was, and I will remember it. You know, it's forever. You know, it's we were so happy. I'm sure that some women who were coming to our center, they were even happier than we are, because they had possibility to continue our activities at our center. And it is really, it was for our organization great program, and I'm very thankful to Open Society Institute for this. And you know, women visiting our center, they really have a place where they can exchange their feelings, to tell their stories. They can share their own experience with other women, and it's a great place for them. And it is the only place where, right now, it is the only place, but I'm sure that in future other organizations, they will follow the example of our organization and will create more the same kind of programs in other districts of Chechnya, because in some districts which are far away from Grozny, again, women, they haven't any possibility every day arrive to Grozny. And you know, it's to have this the same kind of programs in the other districts, it would be a very good advantage for women at this area. And I'm very happy that we get this possibility, and we are continuing, and we are sure that till the end of this year, for sure, our women are supported. And even today, I would like to tell you a little bit more about our organization. We run two programs at our organization. We have a women program, and we have program for disabled children as well at our center. Women program, we through the program we suggest alternative education to women, empowering women, and we have trainings, understanding of gender-based violence, and we work also at jail with perpetrators convicted for honor killings. Honor killings are very famous in Chechnya, and it is very sad to say that most of Chechens think that honor killing is a great thing, you know, because they think crime against women, even if they haven't any facts, but sometimes happens that the woman, after the death of women, they came to conclusion that the woman wasn't guilty, you know. It's this kind of facts we have a lot. And for men convicted for honor killing, they are very respected in prison. And the man who haven't done honor killing, but he still has in his family someone who should be killed, Chechens say, he's not considered as real man in our tradition. And we have so many traditions, and these traditions, very sad that worst traditions, Chechen traditions, they survived, you know, the traditions even getting from day to day, developing worse traditions and good traditions. Of course, during the war, some good traditions forgotten by people, and through our program, we try to restore some of our good traditions and to explain the people that some Chechen traditions, they lead us back, they are not leading us forward, and sometimes even women, they don't know that Chechen, according to Islamic law, they have rights, for example, to take their children. This kind of we do awareness and we explain to women that there are rights, because some women they think that it is written in law that children belong into their father's family, and through our programs we try to educate women. But from other side, Chechen women, you know, there's some women, they are educated, they get high education, family very interested to give education to women. But this is happening only in Grozny and cities. But in the mountains, people, they haven't possibilities we have in Grozny and surrounding places of Grozny. And they remain not educated, they remain not aware about their rights. And some women, they think if they should just follow the decision of head of family, even she doesn't like the decision, she should just follow blindly the decision of man. And forcible marriages happening in mountain area of Grozny. And last time when I was having a presentation at Columbia University, I gave some statistic about crimes in Chechnya, and students and people attending the presentation, they were very much surprised when I told about 40% of people in Chechnya, they are convicted for crimes, Chechen prisons, they are convicted for crimes against women, and 40%, I think it's very high percent, you know, for. From one side, this statistic says that the authorities, I would explain it, because right now we have more Russians on the prosecutor office, and when before we had our Chechen prosecutors, they were more. They were having another relation to people doing crimes against women. But now we have Russians, a lot of Russians, and the people who did crimes against women, they are convicted. But, you know, I was thinking about this fact that Russians, they are not going to stay in my republic forever. They, step by step, they are already moving from the key positions. And again, as soon as these key positions will be taken by Chechens, I'm sure that the crimes against women will again will return back, and the men will not be convicted for their crimes against women. And I think that you know, one organization, two organizations are not enough in Chechnya to have a good job against violence. And I think we need more collaboration and more support from others to get some success in our job. And I hope that in future, and I was very happy when the job done in Chechnya, the problems we have in Chechnya, were noticed by Women's Commission. For me, it was very important. For me, was important not to receive this award, Voices of Courage. For me, was important to pass the problem we have in Chechnya here to USA, and to announce that we face a lot of problems. And to get support from people and let people know what is in reality happening in my republic. And I hope that through my speeches and through my work I do in our organization, a lot of other people, active women, they will follow example of our organization. And I'm sure all women coming to our center, they will share all information where they get at our center with their friends, with their families, and we became very strong very soon, and we will have a lot of possibilities to continue our job against violence. And maybe for a future, maybe I will share with you some statistic information that the violence is finished in Chechnya. And I don't know when this will happen, but we all will try to do our best to continue our job. And I would like to thank everybody who is interested and who supported me in my job and who gave me this nice opportunity to speak with you, to share my feelings with you. And I would be very happy to answer your questions if any of you have a question. Thank you very much.
Maybe if you can maybe share a story or two from your work that you feel might sort of illustrate in more personal detail what women in Chechnya are going through.
Okay. So, I already shared this story with Almut. Almut, I think you already heard this story from me about young women. This story was the last... the last story happened at our center. One young woman, she was very beautiful, this woman. She was attending our center, and she was learning computer at our center. She came a couple of days, and you know, but I noticed that this woman, she wasn't so much interested in computers. And when I saw her, I noticed she has very, very serious problems. But I didn't want it to disturb her with my questions, you know. Anyway, she had known that we have psychologists available at our center, we have lawyer. But I decided just to remind her about it. I told her about services we have available at our center. And then I was feeling my personal responsibility, and I told her, you know, if you have some serious problems, you can rely on me and share your problems with me. If you need any time help, I'm ready to help you. She didn't answer me yes, no, and she even didn't tell me thank you, nothing. I didn't hear any word from her. I understood, you know, and I was hoping that from time to time, when she will come for next a couple of days, she would share her feelings with other women and she would feel more comfortable at our center. But next 2 days, I haven't seen her at all. She didn't appear at the center. And I was quite worrying about her, and I was thinking maybe she had some other problems, but she didn't come. And after 3-4 days, I heard from my friend. My friend, she's working at the hospital, and Grozny is a very small place, but we can gossips are spreading very fast. If something will happen here tomorrow, it will spread in all over the Chechnya. Everybody will hear about that. And my friend told me, you know, yesterday to the hospital was delivered very young woman, and she shot herself. And you know, I didn't expect that it would be the same woman. And I didn't know what was happening with her. And I heard from her the story about this woman. And so it turned out she was older than her husband for 5 years. When she was going to get married with her husband, her mother-in-law came to her family and told, I don't want your daughter to marry my son because she's older than my son for 5 years. But her son and she were in love with each other and they haven't had any problems. And they decided against the will of their two families to get married. And one day her own family, when she didn't obey to her family, they refused from her. They told her, if you will get married with this man, you haven't way back home. You can marry him, but you will not be allowed to be back. She didn't listen to her parents and she got married. And after a couple of months, her mother-in-law, every day she was abusing her, she was putting pressure on her. And one day she came to her and her husband wasn't this day at home. He was serving at a militia office, and he had two guns, one automatic gun and second gun was small gun. And when she came to her and asked her to leave the house, she was engrossed. She didn't know what to do. And first she was thinking, I haven't any place to go. My family refused from me. And if my mother-in-law right now says to me, I should leave the house. She was in despair. She just went to the bedroom, took the gun and shot herself. And then she was delivered to the hospital and she died at the hospital. And this woman, when I heard about this story, I really was shocked. I was feeling a little bit blame, you know, that we haven't had developed programs to help her. Even we had before safe house, but our safe house was in Grozny and we had to close it. This safe house was opened by the support of Care Canada, and the information spread very quickly about our safe house. And husbands of some women who stayed at our safe house, they were putting some pressure on us. Even if we haven't had their wives at our center, they were coming saying to us, my wife is in your safe house, I need to see her, you know. We had threats and we had to close this safe house. But when this case has happened, you know, I was thinking that if we would have available safe house for this kind of cases where women haven't place to go or should reconsider their actions, or they should think about more serious sins for a couple of weeks or days, you know, it would be great to have this place, but not inside of Chechnya, outside of Chechnya, somewhere in neighboring republic where women would feel safe. And I was even thinking about this issue when I experienced the same scene, you know, when my husband wanted me to stay home. He was insisting that I should leave my job. I was refusing to leave my job. He beated me, and he beated me very badly, that I had known if I would go in this condition to my family would never let me be back and back to him. And at that time, if, for example, myself, I would have known about a place available, about safe house, myself, I would use this place, because when my family saw me in this kind of condition, my head was swelled twice in its size, and when my sister saw me in this condition, she fell down, and all my family, they were against my husband, and they couldn't see him. You know, we had a lot of problems because of this. From other side, you know, I was understanding. I'm not going to justify my husband but for my children, for their future, it wasn't good to have bad relations between his family and between my family, because since this thing happened to me, you know, my family hates his family and they never accept, for example, to have any kind of good relations with my husband. And anyway, even if I'm not going to return to my husband, deep inside I understand that he's father of my children, and anyway, children want to have father. And when my own children see the fathers of my other nephews, nieces, my children, they become very sad. Recently, you know, my son was telling me all other nephews he was calling by names, my nieces, nephews, Zaur, Fariza, they all have chosen good fathers for them. Why, Mama, you have chosen so bad father for me? He's never visiting me. Why you have chosen so bad father for me? You know, at least I would prefer that to keep some good relations between my family and my husband's family, for the sake of children, not for the sake of some this kind of, since I can understand that my husband, he's guilty himself, but for the sake of my children, I was ready to forgive him what he did and give chance to my children to see him. And you know, it's for me, it's right now very difficult to manage this kind of things. And I'm sure thousand other women in Chechnya, they face and have experience in the same cases, the same things, you know, because the fate of Chechen women, the same. The Chechen women, when she get married, all in-laws, they consider her like slave, and since the time she get married, she has to forget about her life, you know. She's not allowed it to visit her family when she wants. She's not allowed it to have job. She's not allowed it to go outside when she wants. If she has job, how to do in at the house, she's not allowed it to go anywhere. But you know, the job at house, housework is endless. It's impossible to finish everything because every day you do the same. For example, when I wanted to visit my family, I was, you know, getting up at 7 o'clock trying to finish everything and to find half an hour to visit my mother. Even if I was living very close my husband's place was very close to my family's place. It was just next street, and just go to the next street. I was from the morning thinking how to get half an hour to visit my family. For me, it was like you know, big deal to visit my family, and I was sometimes saying, we haven't sugar, we haven't bread, I need go to the shop. And on the way to shop, I was running to my home because my family was becoming very unhappy when I wasn't visiting them. They were saying, oh, you just stay there, you don't visit us. And I was just didn't wanted them, you know, to tell that my husband don't want me to come, my mother-in-law don't want me to come. And it's this kind of problems happens with everyone, and so the women's life is not easy in Chechnya, and so we have so many problems. Maybe I give speaking too much, you know, giving even.
Yeah. If you have a question, if you could go up to the microphone. Well, if you could go up, if you wanted to, sorry.
Thank you. That was a very fine and clear presentation. My name is Nicholas Arena. I'm an attorney here in New York. Some years ago, I was part of a domestic violence workshop in Moscow, perhaps the first one. And women from Russia came from near and far to participate. My question to you is that since Chechnya is still part of Russia, although, as Rachel Denver pointed out, it's not part of the same judicial system, if there is any judicial system in Russia. To what extent are Russian women interested in your problems or feel part that they share your problems or support you in your problems?
So, you know, Russian women, at the moment we are so far away from each other. It is completely different two nationalities, and we haven't any collaboration even with Russian women organization. Our organization right now is the only organization in Chechnya working on gender-based violence issues. And still we haven't any collaboration with Russian organizations working on the same issues, on the same problems. And I know it's very bad. Maybe we could have collaboration and we could improve through getting experience from each other. We could improve our projects in Chechnya. But we plan to have in summer conference, and we plan to invite some organizations from Russia and from surrounding republics, from Ingushetia, North Ossetia, Dagestan, to have collaboration with these organizations and to share the experiences and to learn more about each other. And I know it is very important to collaborate with each other, but at the moment we are not collaborating with any of them. In future, we plan.
Hi, I'm Phoebe with the Women's Program here at OSI. I wanted to ask you sort of a related question. You know, being that you were at the Commission on the Status of Women earlier this year, one of the focus or the thematic areas of the conference was to look at women in conflict, looking specifically at peace and security issues and the effects of conflict on women. And I know that from talking to women's groups that are based in the South Caucasus, one of their concerns is that in many of the breakaway territories, there's a real challenge in thinking about how to implement this particular resolution, Security Council Resolution 1325 on women, peace, and security, that it was very difficult for them to be able to go to state officials and say, you know, and to push them on implementation because in many cases they... The whole point is that they don't want to be associated with that state, and they're looking to have their own independent territories. So I guess I'm just wondering if you can, you know, first of all, do you see promise around the Resolution 1325, which many women's groups around the world are using to advocate on their issues in conflict or post-conflict societies? And then secondly, you know, if how do you see it being useful in a situation where Chechnya has long wanted its own independent state and there has been a sort of a break with the Russian government? So that's, I hope that's
you mean
clear.
To get independence from Russia?
Well, in other words, you had mentioned that there's not a lot of cooperation between the different women's groups in the Northern Caucasus. And I'm just wondering, do they see the Russian state as being the body that they would want to go to say, we would like to see these services or these changes for women? Who's that body to go to for help?
You know, this question is very complicated question because, you know, we have so many problems, and women problem is not considered yet by anyone, you know. The women issues, the women program, we have even international organizations, they just stepped from emergency stage to economic development stage. And as you know, before, behind development at emergency stage, nobody didn't pay any attention at this kind of questions. And all organizations working in Chechnya, they pay right now attention at economic development of economic situation, and they implement some microeconomic projects in Chechnya. And recently, the last organization who did a survey about women's program, survey on gender-based violence issue, it was International Rescue Committee. But after this survey, I haven't noticed any kind of programs they set up there. I don't know, maybe they had some other urgent things to do before starting this kind of programs. Maybe they found that Chechnya is a very difficult place really to set up this kind of programs, because for Chechens, for Chechen governments, for Chechen officials, gender-based violence is not existing at all. They don't want even to speak about violence, and when you even pronounce word violence, you might have some problems. And just not to have problems, we had to use some other words in our program. When we give report to the officials, we never write that we have gender-based violence project. We just write we have women program, psychosocial support for women. We have to change the terms and just not to have the problems, because I think Almut already heard from me this. Once we had a meeting, and all officials were there, and our organization was there. At that time, we were implementing Partners of Care Canada, and it was written that the project we implement, it is gender-based violence project. And when the head of this department, the head of external affairs department, saw the word gender-based violence project stuff, he told me, you know, what? Gender-based violence here in Chechnya? Who has this project, you know? And I was giving him this report, and he told me, you know, officially, without any hesitation, we haven't gender-based violence. We have women like you who hasn't any man to stop. You know, he told me this, you know, and since that time, we are a little bit careful even with our words, you know, with officials, because you hear about the scarf story, you know, it's a very big issue in Chechnya right now. We have so many problems around, you know. I think it's a shame to speak about the scarves. Our president, you know, he's saying that instead of reconstruction, instead of looking for people who disappeared, instead of stop abusing, you know, instead of solving very important issues, he's just saying something about scarves, you know. It's funny, you know, and the Memorial is very serious organization, and they put a lot of pressure on this organization because this organization, they did statement and they told, you know, Chechen women, Chechen girls, they should have option if they want to wear scarves, to wear them, and if they don't want, not to wear them, because it is a wish and will of our president. You know, it's like this kind of programs, this kind of things. I think it's right now, it's not time for officials to solve this problem. Even it is very important issue. They are busy with some other problems, with scarves, for example.
Maybe Marla and Alex, you can both ask your questions, and then Gaston can.
Hi, Gaston. I was just wondering if you could comment or describe a little bit about the really innovative work you're doing in prisons with the perpetrators.
Okay.
And then Alex.
I always find myself asking this question in issues of gender-based violence, but I'm curious if, in your experience, there have been examples of men who, and excuse my attempt at irony, who are man enough to stand up to the sort of social norms and be supportive of, if not in a network, you know, individuals who can be supportive of people who have been victims of that kind of violence, or movements that protect people from that kind of, I mean, has there any example? Because it seems like it's a pretty important in the long run attitude to try to develop in men who are doing this in order to get them to stop. Not just, you know, sort of from the prison perspective, but also, you know, to get them to some, I mean, there's got to be, I like to think that I would be able to stand up to it if I were surrounded by it. And so I'm thinking, you know, there's got to be somebody out there who can be a starting point for, you know, men who are willing to take a stand against that. And I'm wondering if you have any experience or any anecdotal, you know, stories
you
that you can tell us about.
Ready help to our program, ready join
ready to help
team.
Your team or
you know,
or help people who are in your, you know, any kind of examples of that.
We haven't any men who just as volunteer come to our center and ready help us, but we involve into our activities religious leaders and writers, famous Chechen writers. We work with it is his name is Musa Ahmadov. He's coming and he's giving very good understanding of gender-based violence for women. And also recently we had a couple of discussions, open tables at the university with guys, with students. And the group was mixed with men and women. And so we have this kind of men we attract to our activities, but we haven't any volunteer men. Even I think nobody will join us, like, you know, you do great job. It's really we have violence against women, you know, Chechen men, even if he will think violence is existing, according to Chechen mentality, he will not join women and start to do something against violence, except on famous people whom we officially ask to assist us, give some trainings, give some ideas about violence, and some Vaynakh leaders who knows religion, and through the religion they explain. But I noticed that, you know, when one man stays alone with a lot of women, he stays with women, he agrees with all the decisions, with everything. But if you see two men in one room, they all will not say nothing for women, you know. They will say, you all should follow the will of men, you know. It's Chechen mentality, it's like that, you know. When man is alone, you will hear good things from him, but when he will be with others, you know, he would prefer to keep silence, not speak about violence, not speak about any kind of traditions. But when we involve them in our activities, they are quite well, but only one by one, not together.
Do you want to say a word about the work that you do in prisons?
Yeah. At prisons, we have trainings. We have trainings with staff of the prison, and we have trainings with perpetrators who are convicted for honor killings, for crimes against women. And this kind of trainings, we found them very useful because, you know, we learned that at the beginning of the trainings and at the end of trainings, we fill questionnaires and we ask some questions, and at the end we ask the same questions to see the differences and to see if they change their behavior, they change their mind, regarding some issues or not. And I would like to give you some examples. At the beginning, when we just started our activities at prison, they all were laughing at us. They were just, you know, it was good for them to be out from their cameras, but it was, they were more interested to speak with each other, and they were not paying any attention at us as if we are not existing. Sometimes they were saying something and laughing, but they were not paying any attention at us. When we started to speak and it was time for them to answer the questions, all of them answered. First question was, for example, if you are getting married, you would choose educated woman or you would choose a not educated woman. About 98% answered, of course, not educated. If not educated, we were asking why. And they were saying, educated woman, she will every time dictate for me conditions where I should put my shoes, where I should put my clothes to keep my clothes clean. You know, educated woman will leave the house, she will not come home, she will have her own principles. And they were giving different details that why they don't want to have educated wife. And then the next question was, do you want your sisters to be educated? And some of them, they were writing, yes, I want my sister to be educated, because if she will get married and she will be divorced, she would be able to take care of her herself. And then our next question was, so you don't want your sister to be a burden for you, that's why you want your sister to be educated and wife? And some of them, they're telling, if wife will be educated, she will be every time, she will know a lot, and she will be, and I will not be able to keep her in my house, and she will not be blindly to follow all my wills and wishes. She will have her own principles, stuff like that. But later, you know, we decided to give them arguments, good arguments and bad arguments, in case if you get married with educated wife and if you get married with not educated wife. We were saying, you know, if you have educated wife, you have chance to have good children, children with good manners, you know, your children will be respected by community, you, and if no, you know, you will have dirty children which will not be respected in society, which will not be also educated, your house will not be managed in a well managed, you know, you will not be respected by the people. We were given, everyone was given his opinion, what is good, what is bad, if you have. And, you know, at the end of our questionnaire, at the end of our training, we asked the same questions. And I was very much surprised when I noticed that about 75-78% of men, they changed so quickly their opinion about this, and they told, even they told, you know, if I wouldn't attend this training, I would really prefer to get married with not educated, because I heard from my fathers, from my grandfathers, you know, it's better to get married with not educated wife. And it is one Chechen funny story. It was told by old man, if your daughter-in-law is educated, and if she will be sweeping the floor, if she will find a piece of a newspaper on the floor, she will stop sweeping and she will be reading the newspaper. And You know, it will take for her a couple of hours to sweep the floor. And if the daughter-in-law not educated, she will notice a piece of paper, she will just throw it away and will continue sweeping, you know. We have a lot of this kind of stories about that it is really priority to get married with not educated. We have thousands of stories like that in Chechnya, and you know, it was a very difficult. You know, from childhood, children hear this kind of stories, and already in their mind they have. But even they don't know why they have this kind of. But when you start explain, give examples, most of them understand very easily. And we experienced that after the training, all men, they were changing their mind, and they were ready already. And even we heard so many good background. We heard so many good things from our people who were attending the trainings. They were saying maybe if they would have this kind of trainings before, maybe they would they wouldn't be at prison, you know. They wouldn't do the crime they did. And we met there one man. He killed his two sisters, and he buried them somewhere at the forest. And this man, first he was keeping silence every time when we didn't know that he's convicted for killing two sisters. And he was every time so sad and keeping silence. And only a couple months ago we learned that he killed his two sisters. And he started only now to speak with us, you know. And when he was speaking last time, his eyes was full of tears. He was saying he doesn't know how he will return home and how he will look into the eyes of his nephews and nieces he left without mother. And you know, it was so impressive. He says, even if I will stay till the end of my life in prison, I can't even think how can I justify my actions, how can I live with this crime I did. And he told he was encouraged by all other men in his family that he should do it. If he will not do it, they will do it. And he was thinking if he will let them do it, he will be considered as weak man in the community. And he did it because of the pressure from other men. And of course he feels right now very, very sorry for the crime he did. And he says his relative of president, he's living in neighboring village next to president, and he says through the people he hear encouraging speeches that he did well this crime, and he's very respected in the prison because you know, he's a real man. And even, you know, it's this kind of thing to change, it will take long time. But for me it is important that he understood himself that the crime he did, you know, it wasn't a good decision for him and for his family as well. And through this kind of work, you know, I'm sure we have very good positive changes. And because, you know, all these people, when they will be back, I think for people from their villages, it would be very interesting to see that they changed their mind and they are not happy with the crimes they did, you know. Because it might happen that if we wouldn't do this kind of job, they would return home and would be like heroes in the village, you know, that they did something good, you know, and people. But now I'm sure these people will give good examples to other young men who still, you know, might do this kind of crimes but still haven't done. Maybe they will have good impact on this kind of cases and change the mind of those who is going to do this kind of crimes. I'm sure for 100% that, you know, we will have very good result, and we already have good result, because when we arrive to the prison, the staff of the prison, the chief of the prison, he says, you know, for the 8th of March, first time he saw so many letters full of love to their wives, to their mothers. Even if they saw some postcards, they asked to bring postcards to send to their relatives' home. And he was saying, you know, you change this prison. Really, I didn't expect that this man will change the behavior, their mind so quickly. It's he's very thankful to us. And he says, you know, I wanted to keep... I really appreciate your work here, but I don't want you to officially to speak much about the work you do here. And he says, you know, what you do here, maybe our officials, they will not like it, because in effect, you know, it's officially our president is... he's very powerful, and when someone is doing these kind of crimes, he's encouraging them, and he says, what we do there and what is happening on the in the community of top officials, it's something different. That's why he says you should be a little bit diplomatic in your work. I want you to continue the job, but at the same time, not to speak in public much about your activities, what you do. We try to continue our job, and at the same time, for us it's important, not publicity, for us important the result of our job, and that's why we keep on our activities and not do so much publicity.
Thank you, Gassam. I think we've run out of time, but Pasha, maybe if you want to ask your question after. So thank you very much for your stories. They're very powerful. Thanks to Rachel as well.